Did this come to be a very significant help, a factor in your service on the Supreme Court? That you know,
being a member of the PSC?
Well, I'm talking about the method, the ability to make these decisions and to make them in harmony. And you, as we will presently discover, went into an atmosphere that was somewhat lacking in harmony at times. But you, I'm talking now about the Supreme Court. When you got there, there were some pretty strong egos and some clashes and that sort of thing. I'm going to ask you eventually how it is that you were able to get these one after the other decisions that you wrote without dissent or one concurrence and that sort of thing.
Yeah.
This, to me, is part of your the significance of the kind of service that you gave. But anyway.
I think that really comes from your perception of what the decision-making process is about in government. There are a lot of judges who will tell you that they are paid to render their personal decisions. I heard that a lot on the Michigan Supreme Court when I was there, mm-hmm. from several of the judges, that they thought their responsibility was to render their personal judgment. I always thought that in a collegial situation where you were not the sole decider, mm-hmm. that you were supposed to make sense by compromise if necessary. They say the art of politics is compromise. The art of successful government is certainly in a place where you have many competing forces is compromise. I mean, that's nothing strange about that. There's nothing profound about that. That's just a fact.
Well, Burns must have felt the same way, that you and
yeah.
John Burns had good chemistry, and you both.
We did, and we had great respect for one another's opinions. That's why we didn't ever disagree on anything. We wouldn't have discussions about this,
sure.
We were on different sides, but mm-hmm. usually, rather than trying to make his point with the other guy and make it stand up with the other fight, you give your opinion, mm-hmm. and you say, what do you think? That was our way. And he said, well, I think this. And I said, and I would often say, well, God, that sounds better than what I said. He said, well, no, I don't think so. So we'd often wind up arguing the other guy's position. And we'd wind up saying, well, why don't we do this? And sure. And Tommy paid me the greatest compliment I've ever been paid in my life. He said, I'm older than you are. I've been around longer. I've been in government more. I was assistant prosecutor. I was in the legislature for 2 terms. He said, I've seen this animal around here. He said, I never thought that I'd be a part of any government agency that worked like this one. He said, he told me, he said, as a chairman and lead of this organization, he said, it works like a textbook.
Yeah, it was.
And he paid me. He always paid me the highest compliment about what I was doing, and he was very cooperative with me in administrative matters. James H. Lee, who was well, Maurice Hunt was on when I first went on, but Maurice left
California. Or something.
Yeah, his term came to an end, when Tom Burns came. But then when Tom came on, and we just instantly hit it off, and neither one was trying to upstage the other one. We didn't have any personal agendas or party agendas. We just wanted to do the right thing. And so Jim Lee, who was there, was a Democrat. Jim was a passionate guy, and I'm going to use that word again in connection with somebody else whom I served with. But Jim had a feeling that somehow the utilities and the transportation companies, including the railroads, were not really forthcoming with everything. He had great suspicions about it, and so he had difficulty seeing that point of view. After all, he'd come from 25 years of being on the other side as a representative of the city of Detroit taxpayers. He was a part of the Corporation Counsel's office and was mm-hmm. designated to be the representative of the taxpayers in major rate cases. So Jim had seen a lot, and I guess it sort of soured him on what he was coming from the utilities, and so I guess Tommy and I were sort of innocent about it. We just went to try to see what made sense, and then I would go off and try to sell Mr. Lee on what we had done, and most times I was successful, but not always. but we usually were unanimous. But Tommy and I would basically work it out, and we would do it in the strangest times and strangest places. Both of us commuted to and from Lansing every day, almost every day. Tommy lived in Saginaw, 75 miles from Lansing. I lived in Flint, 50 miles away, and we'd always leave, often leave together. Not always, but often leave together, 6:30, headed home. And we would head out in old M-78 and get out to Perry Corner, 20 miles outside of Lansing, and one of us would get a thought and we'd raise a hand up in the car. And that meant that we would stop. And we'd go over to the parking lot of that restaurant in the corner. And we'd go in there and have a cup of tea or coffee. And he said, about that thing we were discussing today, that case. I bet we did that 30, 40 times over a couple of years. And sometimes when we were kind of puzzling over something, I'm driving my little car, he's driving his, and we're in tandem, and he would go on further. He wouldn't turn off at Perry Corner. He would go up to the M-13, the Durand, on 78, and go to Saginaw that way. And we stop in there sometimes, but more often than not, we'd get a hot thought, a hot flash or something on the way outside of the city to stop it at Perry and discuss it. And we said, let's do that. Or we would say, well, think about it overnight. And next morning we'd come in and say, what do you think? And we would wrestle with the toughest ones and decide what we would do. And then we'd go try to sell to Mr. Lee.